Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Club. This is Jeff Yance. I'm the program director at the Loft Cinema. And as always, I'm very happy to be here with occasional filmmaker Heather Lares.
Hola.
And multimedia artist Rusty Boulay Stevenson.
Hello.
Hello, Heather and Rusty. So, in honor of our nation's birthday coming up, 4th of July, we're going to be talking this week at Film Club about film censorship and its relation to one of our greatest American rights, freedom of expression. So, what we're going to be talking about are two films in particular that are political satires of America, particularly American foreign policy. Also two very funny films, by the way, I think. Team America, World Police, and The Interview.
That's right.
Yes. Both of which have had various issues in terms of censorship. So maybe we should start talking about Team America, World Police, since that came out first, 2004. Came out during the Iraq War. So if not everyone has seen Team America, World Police, just in a nutshell, if you can, it's kind of hard to describe, but it's puppets. It's a really dirty, filthy, kind of politically incorrect movie starring puppets as a global terrorist fighting unit called Team America, who is fighting the war on terrorism, but doing it very badly and destroying the world in the process, basically.
Yeah, they blow up the Louvre.
They blew up the pyramids of Egypt, and yeah, it's just kind of a big mess.
Should say it's from the creators of South Park.
Trey Parker and Matt Stone. So it's got the South Park sensibility, just very anything goes, basically. And I personally love Team America, World Police. I know not everyone loves it. I find it really funny in the way that I find South Park funny, in that it's just total anarchy. And there's nothing off limits.
As irreverent gets.
Yeah, yeah.
But still with a voice that's trying to say something a lot of times.
Yeah, there's actual real political satire in their work.
It's subversive.
Very subversive.
Very subversive.
Yeah. I think we should also mention, because it's important, that Team America in the film is battling Kim Jong-il, North Korea, so who is he's supplying international terrorists with weapons of mass destruction. And there's a lot of poking fun at him, and I think that upset a lot of people that we were sort of mocking this kind of a deadly enemy to the United States and sort of making light of him as this lonely guy. It's a musical, so he gets to actually sing a number about how
I do picture that in my mind, not him singing lonely.
I'm so lonely. Yes. Yes. Great music in the movie, by the way, because they're really good at writing musical numbers. But the film did generate some controversy at the time because of its very kind of flippant take on the war on terrorism.
Well, you know, it does have a flippant take on the war on terrorism, but I would say so did a lot of people. And I think that's why the marionettes work, the puppets work, is because it's such a caricature of how people think about things, kind of the war on terror and this heroism and stuff, and people who are talking about how we'll go over and we'll just take care of these people and we'll kick their asses and we'll carpet bomb them to hell or whatever. They talk about it in this way that's not real.
Right.
And
right.
So the marionettes really works in that way.
Yeah.
It really makes you recognize just how ridiculous these statements are, and that, you know, we can't go and police the world, really.
Yeah. Well, it makes you realize how cartoonish the war on terrorism actually
was.
It literalizes that, which I think is kind of a brilliant idea. Now, Heather, I know that you were not a huge fan of Team America, World Police. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, watching puppets for 90 minutes was not my favorite thing to do. But the way Rusty put it, I guess I do have a little bit of appreciation for that, because it's true. I mean, they have this real knack of presenting both sides of the war as ridiculous, because it was, in a way, both sides of mainstream. So say, like, there's the conservatives that were like, let's go carbon bomb them. Then there was the neoliberal Alec Baldwin celebrities that, you know, just want everyone to feel good and treat humans well, sort of, but not really thinking about the big picture. And and by the way, why are we asking a celebrity about what they think about the war? So I appreciate that kind of context. Still not my favorite. I mean, I'm going to say it's very 14-year-old boy humor.
Yeah.
You know me, we've talked about it before. Yeah. That's not my favorite. But there were moments. I mean, there are definitely moments when you're like, you know, when they... I can't remember the character, but they want him to go undercover as a Middle Eastern person and infiltrate the terrorists. And they just put like a hair on his face randomly. And you're like, what? I mean, it's funny because you're thinking like, here are these people trying to save the world. And this is their version of, you know, making a mockery of that, because it really is, because you think we can go to a foreign country and instill U.S. values, and it's just making the mockery of that idea. And yeah, I do appreciate that. But as a whole, not wanting to watch Team America again.
Yeah. And it does sort of mock American insensitivity. I mean, the only phrase they teach Gary when he goes undercover is Durka, 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 which means nothing to anybody,
right?
Even to the people in the Middle East.
Well, and the people in the Middle East in the film, they say that a lot, Durka, Durka, and they say Allah, and they say Fatwa, I think.
They say Fatwa, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
And to, you know, if you want to characterize a neoconservative towards that version of the world, that's where they're coming from. So I get why they're making a mockery of all of that. They're very smart. Trey Parker and Matt Stone are very smart in that way.
Yeah. So. And why I think it's brilliant is that it does mock both conservative and liberal attitudes. It's not...
Yes.
I think a lot of conservatives at the time took it to task, thinking that it was coming from a liberal perspective, but it was actually mocking
both
of those.
It does. It does. And I think that that's a really interesting part of the film is how the, because Hollywood stars are the ones that speak out against what Team America is doing. And they end up kind of banding with Kim Jong-il.
Yeah.
It's interesting, that whole episode and everything that's centered around it. One, I think it's interesting how the actors themselves responded to it. Alec Baldwin, that's his voice in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
He was happy to be part of it. Sean Penn?
No.
Not so much.
Well, because it's making a mockery of his attitudes as well to a certain degree. I mean, yeah, they took shots at both sides.
They did. George Clooney was happy. He said he would have been offended if he had not been included.
Been left out, exactly, yeah. I don't know if Matt Damon loved it, but they particularly go after Matt Damon in the film.
Oh, that's true.
For very specific reasons, which I don't really repeat because it's pretty offensive. But and of course, it's the Film Actors Guild, whose acronym causes some people some problems.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Well, fair, yeah.
You think about it, I mean, they're also making a comment on our society as a whole. Like, why are we even bothering to listen to celebrities? I mean, we do. In this real day, still into this day and age, we still want to hear what Susan Sarandon and Alec Baldwin thinks about politics, which is ridiculous in my opinion.
It was so silly. Like, why was Janine Garofalo our foreign policy expert at that time? Why was that the case?
Right.
That
Tim
needs
Robbins.
that needs to be made fun of.
Right. It does.
It does. And one of the writers pointed out, because that's how I took it. At first it kind of ruffled my feathers a little bit, the attitude taken towards the actors. There was a real reason why we shouldn't be going to war in Iraq.
Yes.
There were real reasons for that. Right. That still are, we should not have done it. But what they point out, one of the writers pointed out, was she thought that they had actors stand up saying something, just pointed out what a lack of opposition there was to it. That there were only these actors or regular people. You couldn't point to many generals. You couldn't point to many politicians. Most of the Senate voted to go to war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right? And most of Congress voted for war in Iraq. So there wasn't much opposition. And so the film does point that out a little bit, too, when you think about it, that there wasn't any opposition that was vocal and that could get that had a high profile, I guess.
Yeah. And I think a great example of their equal opportunity offense was that they had Michael Moore become a suicide bomber in the film. And of course, Michael Moore at the time was one of the biggest opponents of the Iraq War, and he was everywhere, basically. And then in Team America, they basically blow him up.
I mean, and they just make him a big fat guy that, you know, is
has a hot dog jammed in his mouth and trying to eat and constantly. Yeah.
That's when you have to question, do they have a really good self-image, you know, because he can't, you know, allowing themselves to be made fun of. You know?
Right. And I think interesting, Trey Parker is libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he comes at it from.
I did think about that.
Yes. Yes.
I feel, I mean, like, that was the other thing. I was like, I'm very suspicious because uh-huh. he's a libertarian.
Right. Exactly. Sure. Yeah. But I think, non-politically speaking, the film also caused problems with the censors because of the puppet sex, which is actually one of my favorite parts of the movie. But
it would be, Jeff.
Yeah, of course. That's where my head's at. I'm a 14-year-old boy. Because it's really crazy. If you see the unrated version, they actually had to trim a lot of that scene to not get an NC-17 rating.
Which originally it was given NC-17. And yeah. Trey Parker's spoken out about it quite a bit. And it was sent back to them 9 different times that they had to cut stuff out. And it was all about the puppets having sex. It wasn't the puppets having their heads blown off.
That was fine.
Or Durka Durka.
Durka Durka's fine.
And how completely offensive that is.
Yes, right.
I mean, absolutely offensive. That didn't bother the censors.
No. It was consensual puppet sex. That was the problem.
Kinky.
It was kinky. If you get a chance to see the unrated version, which is available on Blu-ray, I would highly recommend watching it. There's about 30 seconds more puppet action.
Well, and that leads to, it's beyond the scope of this, as we've talked about, but there's a movie, this film is not yet rated, the documentary that looks at how films are rated. And there's a lot of stuff in there. There's more censorship than the average American believes is going on in Hollywood. And there's a long history of that mm-hmm. that goes back to the 30s and then through the 50s of film censorship happening. And it still does. If you want to make a film using things from the Defense Department, using tanks, using airplanes and stuff to make your film look like a war film, the Defense Department's going to oversee what it actually
yes.
says.
Yes. And there's a long history of that.
Yes.
I mean, Top Gun, which I like to watch on 4th of July also, that was made with the, you know, okay of the U.S. military, so they could use all the fighter jets and all that. And it's very pro-American. There's nothing critical at all in that film.
That's right.
But you can't be if you're, you know.
If you're going to make a film like that, then the Defense Department is going to have a say in what your script actually says.
Yes.
And that's kind of amazing. And then if you want to show women enjoying sex in your film, that's probably going to be deleted by the censors, by the MPAA, if you want an R rating instead of NC-17.
Mm-hmm. Right.
NC-17, if you get that, your film is not going to be in theaters as much.
Right.
Fewer people are going to come see it. It's mm-hmm. not going to get the marketing right. from the studio that it would normally get.
Right.
It's a type of censorship. And it generally has nothing to do with violence and horrific things that can happen in mm-hmm. film. But women enjoying sex is what seems to be
yes,
the
exactly.
thing that you can't have.
And I think that's what Trey Parker and Matt Stone were so brilliant at doing, is they played up and pointed out the absurdity of that standard by having it be puppets. These aren't even humans. These are blocks of wood. On strings.
Right.
And that was so troubling to the MPAA that they were willing to basically give that a kiss of death, mm-hmm. NC-17, that they would give to a movie like Showgirls that has, right. you know, tons of actual humans having sex.
A lot of boobs.
A lot of boobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Trey Parker also points out that when they were doing independent stuff, when they were doing Orgasmo, that the MPAA sent it back as NC-17, and they're like, well, what can we change? And they're like, oh, no, we don't do that because that would be censorship. But then right. once they're with a major studio, they're like, you need to change this and this and this and this.
Yes.
So if you're an independent filmmaker and you're trying to right. show things, the MPAA is not going to help you as much to get an R rating over an NC-17.
Well, the stakes are much lower,
yeah.
I think. For I mean, Hollywood productions, there's so much money on the line. They have to be very specific. They don't want to offend anyone.
That's right.
I think in the independent realm, you're still giving a little leeway in that sense. So the reason we're talking about Team America here is that it has recently become censored. It's no longer available to show in movie theaters for a very specific reason. So I think to kind of get to that reason, we need to talk about the other film we want to discuss, which is The Interview, because the two of them are very related. So The Interview came out in 2014, stars Seth Rogen and James Franco as one fairly dim-witted journalist and one slightly less dim-witted journalist.
That's right.
Yeah. Who go to North Korea to interview Kim Jong-un, and then the CIA tries to get them to assassinate him. Mm-hmm. So I think most people will remember the huge flap around the film when it came out in 2014. North Korea was threatening action against the U.S. if any theater would show it, if Sony released it. So what did you guys think of the film? I mean, it seems like the reaction was far greater than the film should have warranted.
Well, the film, I don't know that it gets a whole lot of attention. It's funny. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's subversive, too. But if it's not about a real political leader, I don't know that it gets a ton of attention. Mm-hmm. The guys worked on this film, and this is something that was interesting to me. They had this film planned for 10 years. They started working on this script, and they were originally, it was entitled Kill Kim Jong-il. Ill.
Exactly.
Yeah. But he was getting old and sick, and so a movie where you assassinate him, probably not a good idea, so they waited.
Right.
And then they put it out as with Kim Jong-un, the son of Kim Jong-il, the mm-hmm. dictator. And I don't think it gets as much attention, certainly, if it doesn't blow up this way and if it's not about a real leader.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I was entertained. I mean, I think I probably laughed more at the interview than I did at Team America, shockingly. But I think it's just more contemporary. Probably that has a lot to do with it. And I, you know, James Franco and Seth Rogen, I don't care what you say, they make a great comedy duo.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
They play off each other so well, even though they do get obnoxious at times. I was entertained. I liked the whole twist of, you know, there was, I think, subtle, well, not maybe not subtle, but probably not as apparent as the commentary of the U.S. media and how they deal with their subjects, because you see how when James Franco's character goes to North Korea to deal with Kim Jong-un, how U.S., you know, CNN, Fox News treats their people they're interviewing and how they get manipulated. There's a couple of lines when they, you know, accuse each other of being honeypotted, where they, like, you're luring in your interviewee to get you the best interview. And I think that's very real. And I think that happens in Hollywood every day and with politics every day. It's just a little twist showing how they handle it in this movie. And I thought that was probably, for me, the most compelling thing going on with the subtext, if you will.
Yeah. It was a great satire of the media, I think, for sure, the American media and also American insensitivity.
Yeah,
much
absolutely.
Like Team America,
Well, there's a really great line where Diana Bang's character says, you know, when will they learn that assassinating is not the answer? When will the U.S. learn? That I thought that that was a really telling moment, right? I thought that that was really important. And as far as censorship goes in this film, it's really a film that's very critical of the United States. There are multiple times where, American media, the James Franco character is pretty despicable, honestly, right? I mean, you don't tend to like him at all.
Right. He's kind of vapid, but he actually is representative of American attitude, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And there could totally be a show like that, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
There is a show like that.
There are lots of shows like that with Dave Skylark.
Yes.
One sensational... Like the sensationalism that we still have yet to learn from as a community, because people are still watching. I mean, I don't watch it, but people still tune into Fox and CNN and all of those shows that are very sensationalistic and not filled with facts or real news, if you will.
Right.
Because they want the ratings and they want what draws them in. And we have not learned that, and we're probably not going to.
Right.
But this is a film that definitely goes for that and kind of tries to spin it a little bit and make it funny. I mean, the media person, I can't remember her name, but the North Korean representative, she's a great role. Her role is great.
Yes.
She's great comedically, and she's great for that other commentary.
Yeah. And I think having Kim Jong-un portrayed as such a bro was very funny.
Oh, yeah.
Because it really kind of humanizes him in a way, because he's not just sort of this evil, faceless dictator. He's a real human that they're going to assassinate, that they end up kind of liking him, which I think is actually very subversive.
Absolutely. Well, and that's why North Korea didn't like it.
Right.
Right. Is because it showed him as a person. And he even says, he's got a great line. Randall Park plays Kim Jong-un brilliantly.
Yeah.
He's got a great line where he's like, well, it's ridiculous that I'm 30 years old and seen as a god to all these millions of people of this country and that I'm their dictator.
Right.
That in and of itself is ridiculous. It's a ridiculous situation.
Yeah. Interesting that the North Korean government, though, called that depiction an act of terrorism. They were actually referring to this film as an act of terrorism.
Because they were portraying him as a human.
Right.
With failings and an ego and, you know, and that's something
a butthole.
Yeah, that yes. poops to peace.
That's
which
right.
was a joke through the whole
that's
movie.
Right.
That he's human and not godlike.
Yes.
And not, and that's what he bases his whole family's career on.
Yeah, and it undermines a lot of the propaganda that they have carefully created around him. Mm-hmm. In North
sure.
Korea. Yeah.
Well, and the State Department looked at the film, our State Department, the mm-hmm. U.S. State Department, and they did actually, the filmmakers cut some of Kim Jong-un, not to give it away, but he dies.
Right.
They did cut some of that scene to make it a little less graphic.
Mm. Yes.
They didn't want to. And so there were some changes made to try to make it a little softer. But it still is the same thing. And honestly, another part of censorship, you know, we have free speech in America, but you could not make a movie. You could not plan to make a movie about killing the president of this country.
Of the United States.
Of the no. United States.
Right.
You could not make that film. The Secret Service would come down on you. You would end up in jail.
Right.
So there, again, it's interesting censorship. It's not something we think about a lot as Americans. We have free speech. We have all these amazing movies. You can say whatever you want. Well, there are subtle ways that censorship is imposed on our film industry.
Yeah, through the ratings yeah. being one of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and it became the idea of, will this cause danger to people? So should we show it in theaters? And so that automatically caused this.
There was hysteria around. It was like mass hysteria. And Sony did buckle and they did pull the release. But they claimed that theater chain said, we don't want to show this. And of course, the theater chain said, well, we can't show it because Sony doesn't want to show it. So it was kind of a blame game. No one really wanted to say we are buckling to censorship. But that's exactly what happened.
Well, and it should be pointed out that 2 years before this film, there was the shooting in Aurora, Colorado.
Yes.
At the Dark Knight, at the mm-hmm. premiere of the Dark Knight. And so theater chains at that time said, we could not have foreseen this. There's no way we're responsible for it. We couldn't have foreseen this. Well, in this particular case, theater chains couldn't say that because there were direct threats from
right.
a nation on right. this planet
right.
saying we will bomb theaters that show this. So you couldn't get away from that. There's real liability there.
Right. But what's interesting is that then Sony decided to, on Christmas Day, mm-hmm. release the film to 300 independent theaters. Mm-hmm.
And so you guys ended up at the Loft.
Yeah, so we showed it at the theater I work at, the Loft Cinema, and I was getting, it was kind of incredible, getting emails from the FBI telling us what to do in case of a terrorist attack, how to profile people who look suspicious. Never thought I would ever have to deal with anything like that. And it was kind of mass hysteria. People saying, I don't want to come. I don't want to endanger my life. Or people said, I don't want to see this movie, but I'll come simply to support the fact that you're showing it.
Yeah.
And I just found it interesting that the independent sector was seen as being okay to risk their life and limb and livelihood, whereas the large chain theaters, it was not worth it
yeah,
to risk
life.
Yeah,
we can risk those art houses.
Art houses can come and go. It's fine. But of course, nothing happened, and it was fine, and a lot of people came to see the film. And the film made a lot of money because they released it digitally at the same time. It was apparently Sony's highest grossing digital release ever.
That's right.
Sure.
So that just leads us to, Heather, our conspiracy theory, which people have posited that, you know, a lot of this was maybe pre-planned for publicity because this movie got a lot more press than it would have if it had just been a comedy that came out and went in a couple weeks.
Well, it was made for $11 million and grossed $44.
Right.
Very unlikely that it does half that much without the huge, enormous amounts of press. So that's $20 million. Could somebody think, could business people think of reasons to make $20 million? And yes. Well,
shocker.
I would totally buy that. I mean, just a little bit of this, you know, the what also happened at the time was the Sony document leak that happened. And I've kind of perused those documents and I totally buy it that they would do this to cause more box office. Within a heartbeat, I buy that they would do that just based on the manipulation that they speak of in their notes. Like there's like PowerPoint presentations about talking about audience and target audience and, you know, gender specific, age specific,
right.
totally buy that they would do that.
Yes. And it kind of fits in with the theme of the movie about the manipulation by the American media conglomerate.
Absolutely.
Over stories and reality.
So it was meta. It was meta.
It's very meta. And I love the theory.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's true, but I love it.
Well, and it's very meta in a film that shows that it looks at itself anyway. I would point out the James Franco character tells you how the film's going to end yeah. early on. He yes. says, I'll be wearing a bulletproof jacket and then we'll escape through this tunnel.
Right.
And they're like, no, you won't. Where do you get a bulletproof jacket and everything? But it is the end of the film. So they're already... You already see within the film that it's very aware of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so yeah, you have to think that the people who are making it know what's going on, know what makes money.
Right.
And any publicity can be, negative publicity can be good. It's the Barbara Streisand effect.
The Barbara Streisand effect, right.
And so I mean, it's a conspiracy theory, I guess, in the fact that we may not know, but gosh, these people make decisions all the time. These corporations, these movie studios, about how they're going to make money,
mm-hmm.
And they don't inform you. They don't inform you, casual viewer.
They're well, doing yeah, this. They don't want you to know that you're being manipulated, and
no,
you know,
just
and,
buy a ticket and shut
yeah.
up.
And we don't often think about it because we just want to be entertained, you know.
So. That's right,
exactly. Yeah, and then just tying it back to Team America. So, just as an example, at the Lost Cinema, we show Team America every 4th of July. Great 4th of July film. And when the interview flap happened in 2014, the studio, I won't name, oh, Paramount, I can say it.
It's easy enough. People yeah. can look it up easily.
Exactly. Paramount, who owns Team America, pulled all screen. A lot of theaters were showing, going to show Team America during the interview run. And Paramount pulled all those bookings of Team America, said, you can't show this film anymore. And it's still no longer allowed to be shown theatrically, even though it's readily available on Netflix and DVD. So it's kind of a question, why? Like, why is that film pulled from circulation, specifically from theaters? And it was at the exact same time as the interview. I can only surmise that it has something to do with them worried about, they're worried about a hacking retaliation.
Well, and that hacking did cost Sony a lot of money, did it not?
It did. It did. And it cost people, a lot of people, their jobs.
And it costs, you know, a lot of actor relationships with movie companies.
Yes.
You kind of found out some behind the scenes negotiations. So.
Right. Yeah. So I can see why the industry's a little skittish about that happening again, because that was a big problem for Sony. And would be for another studio, I think.
Well, and as we discussed, there were people who didn't like Team America because it did that, because it made fun of a world leader in that manner. So there is something behind that. There is something to it. People did see that even when they first saw the movie, they were upset with it. So, mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And just one more tidbit. As we talked about earlier, there's a new documentary that was filmed in North Korea called Under the Sun, which is going to be coming out this summer. It's about a young girl, and it's a documentary about a young girl who lives in North Korea, who's very patriotic and supportive of the country. And North Korea gave an American filmmaker access to come film this, unfettered access. But what the film turns out is that the filmmakers filmed the North Korean government actually staging all of the footage they were allowing them to shoot in this documentary. So it becomes this kind of Truman Show-esque meta commentary on
wow.
how there is no real freedom of expression there. But anyway, the film caused a big flap in the last couple of weeks when the MoMA in New York pulled it from a film series they were doing because they were worried about North Korean retaliation for showing this North Korean documentary. So it's still happening. Like, the people are still worried about this.
And doesn't that just seem crazy that the MoMA of all places would cave to censorship? A place that seems like it shouldn't ever... cave
right.
to censorship.
Well, it seems irrational, like definitely irrational thinking to
yeah.
me anyways.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the curator who made that decision was fired because they came out officially and said, this is not our policy at all. But this one person made this decision thinking, I don't want to, you know, risk any retaliation. But who knows? Who knows the real story?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You don't know the entire behind the scenes.
Right. Yeah. But yet another example that censorship is alive and well.
That's true. That's true. And not to make this a plug for you for your venue, but I see you guys really try at the Loft to try to show a lot of different films that you're an indie art house film theater, and so you guys really try to go out of your way to show stuff that nobody else is showing, and I think that that's important. I think that that's important not just in Tucson, but just all over. I wish we had more theaters and more people speaking up for these marginalized films that are still important commentary for our culture.
Right, and that's... Yeah, exactly. And I think there's an economic censorship. If a film doesn't get into the chain theaters, it's almost like it doesn't exist in a way, in terms of the way the industry views it, because it's going to limit its grossing potential. But there's thousands of films that get released every year that don't play in the malls.
Sure.
And, you know, they're very worthy and great and... So, yeah, so you need alternative spaces to show those. And so I'm hoping we can do that.
Yeah, I think you guys do it really brilliantly. And again, I think it's something that our country needs more of, honestly. So
on that note, that's very patriotic. That's a very flag-waving statement.
We love America.
Yeah.
Uncensored America.
We would never do anything to criticize America. Okay.
No way.
No. Well, this is great. So obviously the conversation... about censorship continues long beyond this podcast, but
and there are other topics that we will, I'm sure, broach at some point. The pre-code era, and then the Hollywood code before we had the MPAA ratings. I think that that's a really interesting time. So, and an interesting conversation someday.
Yes, it's been a long issue. Well, thanks, Rusty and Heather, for this fascinating discussion.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, yes. Thanks, Jeff.
Yes, and please. Listen to us next week. We're going to be taking on a topic that's near and dear to our hearts, the great sibling acting duo, John and Joan Cusack, both equally amazing.
Yes.
And this is going to lead us to rule number 587 of Film Club. Why cast one Cusack when you can cast two Cusacks?